everyone. Welcome to Amelie's Cloud Tech Talks. And today, I'm very excited to have Mr. Chu Yang Tan from across the world from where I am. I'm in Princeton, New Jersey, but Mr. Chu works out of Australia. And that's an excitement for me. I've been interviewing various digital transformation experts, and I met Mr. Chu a year back, and I saw his experiences, and I felt sharing his experience today will be a great asset for our podcast audience. So, Mr. Chu Yang, before I say more about you, why don't you talk about yourself, and then we will talk about the Cloud FinOps and the journey you're doing for your customers. Welcome.
Thank you, Madhu. Yeah, my name is Chu. I work currently at Aratza. We are a cloud FinOps service provider here in Australia. And we help clients, of course, with cloud financial management and cloud cost optimizations. A little bit more about myself. I've been, of course, doing a bit more even before FinOps, doing technology business management, which is whole of technology cost modeling and helping customers to migrate their workloads to the cloud through strategy pieces to build their cloud foundations and cloud discovery pieces. So that's a little bit about myself. And today I'll like to share a bit on just a bit of the basics in AWS on three main topics: EC2, which is compute, RDS, the database, and S3, which is their storage service solutions. So before I start on all three of that, I'd like to share that for any program to be successful, the program for FinOps needs to first and foremost be set up right, with the right guiding principles set in place and getting the right stakeholders all on board. Because as we know in FinOps, it's not just technology or finance or procurement or the XX working in silos. It's all of us trying to create that visibility and share with one another and get the best outcome for the organization that we work in. So the foundation is utmost critical in my personal opinion. So assuming that all of that is done and everyone's all aligned, we can then start doing the optimizations in the first the three areas that we will talk about today. EC2 compute, that's standard compute. You usually go in there and you buy instances for your organization. So the instances can vary very vastly. Some workloads more catered for the memory, some workloads more catered for the compute performance, so on and so forth. So it's important, of course, at an architectural front to work with the architects to ensure that the patterns for the organizations are all set, so that there's a standardized approach to choosing it. And once that's all set and your organization is running, it's then time to optimize. There's a few things that we can do. You can right-size an instance. For instance, you realize an instance is running workloads on it, but it's not consuming the full amount of compute or memory. So that means that you're underutilized. And when you're underutilized, it means also that you are spending too much money on it. So we will need to have the right tools and the right monitoring for costs and usage to be able to understand the data points needed to have the informed discussions with the tech teams. So for instance, if you are at 30% of the compute, you probably can right size it by half as an example. That needs, of course, to be negotiated or discussed with the tech teams to see whether there's any other further limitations that may impede it to be implemented. So you would need to have that discussions and get it agreed upon. And of course, after it's agreed without any limitations, go through the standard software delivery life cycle to do it in the non-prod environments to ensure that all the risks are all reduced, and then push it out to prod.
I'm excited you said that, Mr. Chu. I know you come out from a chartered accountancy finance background, and now you're negotiating with technocrats who has to accept your idea that, hey, we can save some money here. How does that work? How difficult it has been, or you moved from finance to technology, so it is you put your shoe and you can really tell that, hey, I understand finance, I understand technology, that's how you should do it. Maybe, a couple of interactions with engineering for FinOps. If you can tell the audience, that will be fantastic.
That's good. I'll share a bit. Of course, as what you have said, I started off in accounting and finance as my studies. Yep. And like anything in today's day and age, you pivot a bit. Yeah. So it's through assimilation by working in technology programs and projects that I learn a lot more about infrastructure in this case, and then have the knowledge to be able to have informed discussions with the stakeholders. So I come across all the engineers who are very clever and smart people,
mm-hmm.
and they will need facts and figures to convince them on what is the right approach for the organization. If we fail to do that, of course, you do not get their buy-in. So how do we do that? It's through data. And in today's cloud management versus your standard in the past being on the data center on-prem, the visibility has elevated to the level that you could have a apples for apples conversation with the engineers and get them to buy into your process, because you can produce the facts and figures to let them understand what it means when they choose, in that particular example, the right instance or the right workloads and for their systems to work effectively. So that's what I come across. Of course, the learning and journey to get here is I have done things like the cloud certifications. I do speak a lot with my tech leads to help me understand things a lot more. I do speak a lot more also to bounce the ideas with the client side engineers and managers to understand their perspective of the business and what's doable and what's not to be able to make it work. So it's a myriad of things that brings it all together. It's an interesting one which you brought in, but what I would like to bring up for everyone in the audience is also the point that we as an individual are an amalgamation of our own experiences, which makes us who we are. So we are all unique and we will all contribute in slightly different ways. But if we all put our head together, we can deliver a much deeper and bespoke solution that fits any organization because of the sharing of knowledge.
Excellent, excellent. Because when I talk to FinOps, part of Cloud Centers of Excellence and customers, this million-dollar question always comes. Should we train a finance person in technology so that he understands the challenge? Or we take a technocrat, educate him fundamentals of finance, So this is a more of a push-pull mechanism, and I'm sure, Mr. Chu, you coming in from finance to technology, working on technology transformation, it's a life easy for you, kind of.
Yeah, on your point there, I think there's no right or wrong answer.
Correct.
I think it's right time, right place, right person, because a technocrat who is interested in finance will learn finance, and a finance person who's interested in technology will learn the technology. It's then the right fit for the organization and the right growth mindset to be able to push it through. So, I as what you have said, it did make it a lot easier for me to get grasp and get the financial side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, I'm still learning with the tech, as we all know in this space. There's just so much growth, so much changes, so many new generations and instances that gets put in place that you have you're spoiled for choice. And sometimes being spoiled for choice helps, but in other times it impedes because it slows the decision making. And that leads it to the next point of optimization, which is the latest instance. We always want to try to get the instances to the latest generation because, as you have seen in all the AWS talks and the likes, in most cases, when you move to the latest instance, you will either save costs, get better performance, or get both of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the situation as to why you usually go to the latest generation of instances.
Okay. And a little bit peeling onion, I would say, a little bit of these reserved instances committing for multiple years. Where is your thought on those? You know, do you look at the workloads, run it for 3 months, 6 months, understand where you need, or you start committing to certain capacities in advance? Because while compute, storage, and data, all these are becoming cheaper, it's becoming very scarce. You know, the data centers are becoming very limited. No podcast goes away without talking Gen AI. With all these generative AI training, the compute capacity is getting occupied, choked up. So where do you draw the line between saying that, hey, let me reserve a capacity, or let me pay as you go and try to buy spot versus reserved? You know, this complete conundrum of the financial mind, which is the prudence, and the engineering mind, which says, I need little more capacity than my need so that my application never sees throttled up. You know? So what's that balance? You know, will you stress the system to 80th percentile, 70th, some magic number you have in mind? Where do you advise? You know?
So for EC2, and actually let's start for cloud, most organizations move to the cloud for flexibility, adaptability, so on and so forth. Reservations will tie you in for a period of time at a certain amount of resource per hour. So you just need to be aware of that. So we need to trade off, as what you have said, getting the right balance between flexibility and getting the best unit cost, because you have committed, and because of your commitment, the organization gives you a discount. In the particular case of EC2, you can reserve, but you can also get the savings plans, which is a little bit more flexible than the reservations, because it goes across all compute, mainly the big four, EC2, ECS, SageMaker, and Lambda. And it also goes across instance generation, it goes across instance types and the like. So the flexibility is there and it doesn't tie you into a certain resource. But if you do know the pattern of your workload, like you know this system is a ERP that there is a sunset 20 years from now,
mm-hmm.
you may want to choose to reserve because that's the need. So is there a magic number of a certain percent? Maybe if you start at the organization at the crawl walk state,
mm-hmm.
it's a good thing to have a rough number. But the moment you go to run, it should be a case that you should understand it to be able to do it based on known data points on what the system is doing, when are sunset positions, potential upgrade paths, and the likes, to then make an informed decision. And also, once again, things which are talked about bigger in some other organizations is now there's the whole hybrid multi-cloud, multi-vendor situations. So are you going to move from one IaaS provider to another? That also comes into play. And if you do know that, by reserving, you are now committed for that X period. Is it 1 year or 3 years that you have committed? That's when you're tied into this IaaS service provider with the level of commitment that you have committed. So all of that needs to be strategized and planned and think about before you can make the commitment, I guess.
Yeah, so what I hear to your experience is play with the savings plan, because it's across all kinds of tool sets. Yes. Maximize the savings plan, and if you're extremely, extremely known that you don't mind vendor lock-in, you don't mind longer-term commitment, then use the reserve extension. It's a fairly mature thinking, you know, that makes life easier.
And one more point which you did bring up is, of course, if you know your workloads can be supported by spot instances. Once again, there's limitation on spot instances. That will give you probably the best savings possible, which is probably even better than the savings plan in our eyes. So there are workloads that we all know of that can go on spot instances, but of course it will not be your critical systems and the likes.
Correct.
Unless you have a smart way of doing it, which I'm not aware of.
No, that's a $1 million question. I think everybody debates that, and spot versus committed is a right way to put it up. You know, low latency workloads or non-critical workloads where you can share, put it on spot, run it up, get the outcome done. Very nice, yeah. Very nice. And I think we thought about compute. We briefly touched upon storage. But this database, RDS, Aurora, you know, have you seen very large workload optimizations? Where is your thinking on those areas? It's the most complex thing people face these days.
So database, of course, you have to choose the right database engines, which is for your organization, as you have touched base on Aurora. If my memory doesn't fail me, that's the one which you can do a little bit more scaling on. So it will help you, especially if you need to scale with the database. You can also do right sizing for database to ensure you have the right size for your database. And you can also reserve, because the databases, usually it's instances which last quite a long period of time. So you don't usually kill a database in half a year, is what I'm saying. So you can do reservations on it as well. So those are things which you could look at in the database to get the best out of it. But because the database is also a box, the further optimization is then to dive down into the database in itself and seeing what are you storing in there, how did you construct it, and the likes, which will probably help you optimize further, but that's a little bit more advanced. So as a basic, to summarize it, just do the right sizing and reservations, and choosing the right engines will help you get the best outcome for your RDS.
Excellent, excellent. Now, you know, we are seeing this cloud FinOps pick up steam over the last 2-3 years. Maybe you have done a couple of large projects for clients. In your own experience, where do you think is the quick wins? Does it come in compute, storage, network? Is there somewhere we can say, oh, okay. Generally, I look the quick win places. Is it auto shutdown, scaling, clustering? I'm just throwing some words, you know, because I get these words from my customers all the time. Hey, we need some quick wins. Where do I get it? You know,
quick wins.
You can share something.
Quick wins is whatever you can identify and action the fastest possible time. So usually your right sizing will not be a quick win, because that's the discussion to ensure that it needs to be viable. And reservations potentially can be a quick win, as long as you know the longevity of the instances and the likes. Idle stuff will be a quick win, because anything which is idle or not being used, and if you just shut it down and turn it off, you straight away save money. So those are places you can look for quick wins. But at the same time, that being said, it's also the capacity of the teams, right? So if you have a team who's already currently working on doing some discovery in a certain area, and they are ready to go with all their resources committed for that sprint or the likes, mm-hmm. that will be a quick win, and that will be what the ones you should focus on, because people are ready, help the people who are ready.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct. Very nice. That's a great segue for me to look at asking you. I'm sure we talked about AWS today, but from a competitor platform perspectives, Australia, New Zealand market, your clients, do you see who's the leader of that segment where you're being? Is it AWS, Azure, Google? Who is picking up? Any of your thoughts?
For the IaaS space, the biggest users of it will be AWS in Australia. Mm-hmm. Probably second biggest will definitely be Azure, and then GCP will be the third is what I'm seeing. There seems to be organizations which has at least a couple of IaaS service providers as well. So the multi-vendor, multi-cloud, it's a thing, and it really depends on the solution for the right systems, right? Which is what they're doing. And of course, even in the on-prem space, there's people who has that whole hybrid with on-prem as well, which is I think it will be the way people will go. Choose the right options for the right systems and the likes, but they also have to think of the bigger organizational position, because the more platforms you have, the more teams you may need to manage them, because not everyone will be proficient in GCP, Azure, and AWS. They may just focus on one, and then you may have to have a secondary team for the other and a third tertiary, and that's cost as well. So what I'm saying is the organization needs to think in terms of the total cost of ownership if they do want to have the multiple, and in some cases it works, in other cases probably not.
But I think the world goes a full circle. It's right from mainframe to client server to ERPs, and now we are on cloud, and all multiple cloud platforms are coming as competitors. It's a very well said. One has to look at the 5-year, 10-year horizon and make a strategy, because all providers are kind of equal, but have some niche. Wonderful. Yes. One last point before I close the podcast today. There is a recent trend that people migrated workload to cloud, and I see rumors that, moving to cloud was too fast, too quick. I should have kept something in on-prem. Cloud repatriation. Do you see it? Have you advised any of your clients?
There's a lot of clients that has moved to cloud and are seeing the pain, is what I'm saying. And what I mean by that is when they move, they did a lift and shift. So when you do a lift and shift, it will ultimately be more expensive if you did not do any of your optimizations whatsoever. So that's where some of them then seriously considers to move back. The thought I would like to put out there for people to think about is, once again, to our previous conversation, what's the best solution for it? It looks and almost seems like a knee-jerk reaction to then just move back because you feel the pain, without exploring why, root cause, which is very important. And if you get the root cause to understand what is the problem, you will probably get a lot better a solution rather than just reverting back without having thought about why this is happening. It's what I'm going to say, which means, of course, that brings to the point that there's now a market of a lot of cloud cost optimization tools, mm-hmm. and everyone will be doing things slightly differently. It's probably good to either get someone to help you do it or get a tool to be able to help with your environment to just at least explore that point on whether you optimize or not to begin before taking that action on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said. Chu, it was a pleasure. And I hate to do this, but before we close, this generative AI word is so much in the thing. So one very quick question. Gen AI for FinOps or FinOps for Gen AI? Which will come first?
Good and hard one to answer. So Gen AI for FinOps, let me just to make the terminology right. Gen AI for FinOps is Gen AI helping FinOps to get the FinOps work better. And FinOps for Gen AI is the case of we are doing FinOps to save the Gen AI cost, which is going out of control.
Correct.
I think if you just take a view on total addressable market,
mm-hmm.
and you see it this way. Gen AI is definitely a bigger TAM than the FinOps TAM. Chances are, just based on that, it will be FinOps for Gen AI rather than Gen AI for FinOps, which will prevail down the line. Of course, that's not to say Gen AI for FinOps won't happen. It will happen. But the bigger value which will come is maybe we use Gen AI to do FinOps, which ultimately helps with the Gen AI costs.
I love that answer, Mr. Chu. I think, I don't know, you're Deloitte, one of these consulting firms, we were talking about it. I attended a session, and it was funny that they said, oh, people jumped into Gen AI, put in a lot of resources. Now, who is using vectorization? Who is doing prompt engineering? Is my output is used or not? Are we getting money value from Gen AI? You know? So at that point in time, people look at total investments, cloud, everything. I'm with you on that part. I hope the audience is there with that too. And if you know, so Gen AI will be first, then somebody will look at some models to bring in into the world of FinOps. Till then, it will be driven and solved for customers, experts like you, and some kind of product companies like us. Thank you, Mr. Chu.
Before you end there, I can't leave this to rest, but I must say Gen AI is ultimately still going to only be a tool, and there will ultimately be someone who will help curate the inputs on the Gen AI to then get the right outputs for the organization.
Absolutely.
Also, I'm not sure, maybe perhaps we missed the S3, but to give some closing words, in the S3 space, you can look at the right storage classes, getting life cycling rules turned on with intelligent tiering if you do not know your patterns of your storage. So that's just to close it off on the top three that we did talk about.
Absolutely. And I am definitely, you know, for the audiences, we will do one more maybe down the line. We will look at EKS clusters and a little more complex platforms, and including maybe SageMaker. You mentioned about it. Maybe those complex things in AWS we should look at and do one more session. I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much for that Cloud Tech Talk, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you, Manu.